What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, Trump wanted an assurance. Comey refused to give it. The secret conversation that may have doomed the FBI director. And the White House's story of the firing is unraveling. Among those contradicting the president is the president. It's Friday, May 12th.
He's a showboat. He's a grandstander. The FBI has been in turmoil. You know that. I know that. Everybody knows that.
On Thursday, President Trump offered a new version of his decision this week to fire James Comey, the FBI director. Here's what he told Lester Holt of NBC News.
I was going to fire Comey. My decision. It was not.
You had made the decision before they came in the room.
I was going to fire Comey. There's no good time to do it, by the way.
Because in your letter you said I accepted their recommendation.
Yeah, well,
so you had already made the decision.
I was going to fire regardless of recommendation.
So there was really
that's a reference to the White House's original claim that they decided to fire Comey just this week over the Clinton email investigation and based on the recommendation of Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein.
He made a recommendation. He's highly respected, very good guy, very smart guy. The Democrats like him. The Republicans like him. He made a recommendation. But regardless of recommendation, I was going to fire Comey.
This latest account appears to be closer to the truth, because on Thursday, we heard yet another story of what happened that suggests this was ultimately the decision of Donald Trump and that it dates back months. This new version came from my colleague, Mike Schmidt.
Hey.
Hey.
Sorry. So I got the folks here at Kinko's to let me use the phone.
How did you do that?
I told them I needed to call the office. But the problem is I got my laptop on the other side of Kinko's here. I'm afraid some Russian spy is going to take it, so I got to keep my eyes on it.
Michael Schmidt called us from the only landline he could find. So, Mike, what did you find?
So Comey gets fired on Tuesday. I go in the office 7 a.m. on Wednesday morning. We're just trying to figure out what the heck happened. And start making some calls early. And, you know, folks who knew Comey are up, and they're all spun up, obviously, about what happened. And saying, we're just trying to figure out what happened here. Why did this happen? Do they know why this happened? And they say, this guy says, well, there's this dinner. I said, what do you mean there's this dinner? He said, there's this dinner that Comey had at the White House with Trump. I said, well, what was it? Well, I don't know everything about it. Well, it starts getting a little squirrely. I said, well, you got to tell me more. You got to tell me more. And basically, throughout the rest of the day, what I figure out is that 7 days after Trump was sworn in, Comey gets summoned to the White House by Trump for dinner, one-on-one dinner. They start chit-chatting, talking, you know, crowd sizes, election stuff. No one's in the room, no aides, only servers. Trump turns to Comey and says, do I have your loyalty? And Comey says, you have my honesty.
Wow.
Comey tries to explain to Trump why he would have his honesty and perhaps maybe not his loyalty and the importance of that and the importance of independent FBI and judiciary, you know, Justice Department. Trump doesn't seem to take to this, and Trump brings it up several minutes later. He says, well, do I have your loyalty?
So Comey, he asks it again.
He asks it a second time. Comey a second time doesn't pledge his loyalty to Trump. And he says, look, you will always have my honesty. I will always be honest with you. And Trump doesn't like this. Trump says, well, do I have your honest loyalty? And Comey says, yeah, I guess you have my honest loyalty.
It's an interesting phrase. So Trump just really wanted some commitment to loyalty.
He wanted a pledge of loyalty. He knows 7 days into his presidency, he knows Comey's running an investigation into links between Mr. Trump's associates and Russia.
Right.
He knows that this thing is moving forward. I mean, Jim Comey's a lot of things. I mean, Jim Comey's a lot of criticism. One thing I think you can say about Jim Comey is that he ain't going to, you know, hitch his horse to anybody's horse. Comey's long been fearful of looking too close to the president. Comey didn't want to play basketball. Comey's 6'7". He didn't want to play basketball with Obama, who appointed him to his job because he thought he would look too chummy. So Comey's sitting there, weakened in Trump's presidency, probably a little concerned about where Trump may be going. Mm-hmm. And Trump invites him over to the White House, and Comey's saying, I don't want to go to the White House. That's not a good place for me to be one-on-one alone with the president. And if you talk to folks that talk to Comey about this, they say, well, you want to know why Comey got fired? Comey didn't want to pledge allegiance to Trump.
Can you tell us what the White House's response has been to your reporting on this?
They told us that they don't believe this is an accurate account of the dinner, and that, you know, the integrity of their law enforcement officials is of the utmost importance.
You believe it, of course, to be accurate.
Yeah, put it in the newspaper. I don't put anything in the newspaper I don't believe is accurate.
Mike, how does this back and forth and Comey's refusal to give the president what the president, from your story, clearly wanted and maybe needed from Comey, how does that change our understanding, or should it change our understanding, of President Trump's explanations for why he fired James Comey on Tuesday?
The problem with the explanations is that they all contradict themselves at this point. You can't make any sense of it. I mean, the White House said one thing one day, one thing next day, and then Trump said, I don't even care what the Justice Department was going to say, I was going to fire him anyway. So I think that with Trump, you just got to go back to the bare bones basic issues and the issue of loyalty.
And it's because Comey said something about this dinner to his colleagues. Did he talk about how he felt leaving the White House after this? Did he feel like it was going to spell the end for his time as director of the FBI?
I think in hindsight, Comey would look back at this and say, this is the canary in the coal mine for why I lose my job.
Are we learning that to be an independent operator in Washington right now, as President Trump believes himself to be, basically means you are in trouble with President Trump?
I think the problem here is that Jim Comey operated as if he had a 10-year term as FBI director and couldn't be fired and was going to walk his own way. Mm-hmm. That never was going to work with Trump. Comey singing off his own song sheet and doing his own investigation was never going to work. We probably should have seen this train coming a lot sooner than it did.
Mike, thank you very much, and please thank...
Joshua is going to kill me here. He wants me to go.
The folks at Kinko's. Joshua, thank him very much.
He's in training. all right. Bye.
Bye, Mike.
Thanks, Joshua. I really appreciate it.
We'll be right back.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for The New York Times. I grew up in Texas, on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that voters don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray, and that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, especially in such a critical election year. And that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at the New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to The New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
I was going to fire Comey, knowing there was no good time to do it. And in fact, when I decided to just do it, I said to myself, I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story. It's an excuse by the Democrats for having lost an election. that they should have won.
And President Trump was not the only one in Washington introducing new narratives into this complicated and confusing swirl of contradictions surrounding Comey's firing and what was behind it. At a hearing on Capitol Hill on Thursday, yet another story was told.
Since 1995, this committee has met in an open forum to hear about and discuss the security threats facing the United States of America.
So this is an annual hearing. It's called the Worldwide Threats. And what happens is the intelligence chiefs all get together and they discuss the various threats against America, cyber threats, North Korea, ISIS, Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. Matt Rosenberg covers the intelligence community.
And in the beginning of it, that's clearly where Senator Richard Burr, who's the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, wanted to go. He's a Republican from North Carolina. He said at the beginning of his opening statement,
I understand that many people tuned in today are hopeful we'll focus solely on the Russian investigation of their involvement in our elections. Let me disappoint everybody up front.
And unfortunately, I think for Burr, he was the only one who was disappointed.
So did the Comey story just inevitably take over these proceedings?
Oh, it completely took it over. You know, and as soon as Burr was done talking, it was time for the vice chairman of the Democrat, which is Mark Warner of Virginia, to start talking. His opening statement went straight into
the president's firing of FBI Director Comey Tuesday night was a shocking development.
So he went straight at that. Then you went into Dan Coats, as the director of national intelligence, and others talking more broadly about the different threats to the U.S.
Let me start with North Korea. North Korea is an increasingly grave national
But inevitably came around to Andrew McCabe, who is Comey's deputy and is now the acting director of the FBI. This was obviously his first public testimony in that role.
Director McCabe, welcome to the table and into the fray.
Who is Andrew McCabe and what's he doing at this hearing?
So Andrew McCabe was, until Tuesday evening, the deputy director of the FBI. He was thrust into the top job with the abrupt firing of Mr. Comey. McCabe is a name that is totally unknown outside Washington, even probably among many in Washington, but he's very well known within intelligence circles and law enforcement circles. Inside the FBI, he's really respected and has a tremendous amount of support from what we can tell inside the FBI.
So he became star witness.
Yeah, very, very quickly.
I warned you, Mr. McCabe, I was going to have to get you on the record as well on this.
The Democrats were aggressive about trying to both draw out the Russia investigation and the need for it to continue, but also to ensure that there wasn't going to be a cover-up. The Democrats have been very vocal in the last 48 hours saying, we think this looks a lot like a cover-up, that Comey was fired because of the Russia investigation. And they wanted to make that point. You know, at one point, Senator Warner, he straight up said to McCabe,
Mr. McCabe, for as long as you are acting FBI director, do you commit to informing this committee of any effort to interfere with the FBI's ongoing investigation into links between Russia and the Trump campaign?
If they try and politically influence you, if they try and impede this investigation, you got to come tell us.
Hmm. And what did McCabe say, if you know?
I absolutely do.
He said he would.
Thank you so much for that. I think in light of what's happened in the last 48 hours, it's critically important that we have that assurance. And I hope you'll relay, at least from me, to the extraordinary people who work at the FBI, that this committee supports them, supports their efforts, supports their professionalism, and supports their independence.
I will, sir. Thank you.
But what was really shocking was that McCabe basically contradicted the entire White House story for firing Comey.
We've heard in the news that claims that Director Comey had lost the confidence of rank-and-file FBI employees.
You know, a big part of the White House case was that Comey, through his handling, or as they wanted to see it, mishandling of the Clinton email investigation, had totally lost the support of the rank-and-file of the FBI. McCabe gave a very different assessment.
No, sir. That is not accurate.
Saying that, you know, he was widely respected.
I can tell you also that Director Comey enjoyed broad support within the FBI. And still does to this day.
Which is a lot different than what Sarah Huckabee, who's the White House spokeswoman, had said a day earlier.
Look, the FBI is doing a whole lot more than the Russia investigation. I know everybody in this room and probably most of the media around the world would like to think that's the FBI's sole responsibility. But that's probably one of the smallest things that they've got going on their plate in the 20,000 employees that work there.
McCabe came back at that.
We consider it to be a highly significant investigation.
So you would not characterize it as one of the smallest things you're engaged in?
I would not.
So, you know, that's a pretty direct contradiction of what the White House had said. And he also said, you know, we're going to keep doing this.
It is my opinion and belief that the FBI will continue to pursue this investigation vigorously and completely.
What did McCabe say about the scope of the FBI's investigation into Russia and whether or not it should be expanded? Did that come up?
He was really tight-lipped about the details of it.
Yeah, sorry. I can't really answer those sorts of questions in this forum.
Like, he wouldn't get into how many agents are working on it, things like that. He said he thought they had enough resources.
Sir, we believe it's adequately resourced.
So there's not limitations or resources. You have what you need. The actions about Jim Comey and his release has not curtailed the investigation from the FBI. It's still moving forward.
The investigation will move forward, absolutely.
Was it meaningful, Matt, for him to say that he thought the FBI had enough resources in this investigation, given that his superiors at the Justice Department ended up firing Comey shortly after he asked for more resources for that investigation into Trump and Russia?
It was. I'm trying not to read too much into that because kind of as that story developed yesterday, what we learned is that what Comey had asked for was prosecutors, was assistant U.S. attorneys. Mm-hmm. And that's why he had to go to DOJ. If it's just FBI people, Comey can move those people around on his own.
Got it.
But he's got to go to the Justice Department to get prosecutors. Prosecutors, the desire to have more involved in the case speak to a certain level of maturity in the investigation. It doesn't mean they're immediately looking to bring charges or anything like that.
Got it.
You need these people to help organize things. McCabe, I don't know where he is on any of this. Mm-hmm. So does the FBI have the resources it needs? That may be the case. Do they need more from DOJ? He didn't say that.
Got it. Matt, you've made it sound like McCabe found ways to both subtly and somewhat explicitly challenge some of the messages coming from the White House about Comey and his firing. What do you think he was up to in doing that?
I think, honestly, the FBI takes its role pretty seriously and the idea that it's independent and that he was stating what he knows to be the facts. And I definitely joked around with a few of my colleagues up here that I guess he talked about it with his family and decided he didn't want to be the interim director.
What did you mean?
That, you know, there's no way the White House liked what they heard. I can't imagine they did. I mean, maybe, you know, anything could be possible. I've kind of stopped trying to understand the decision-making process inside the White House on a lot of these things because it seems largely to revolve around one person. I don't know.
The president.
The president, basically, yes. I don't know, you know, what role Trump himself will have in this decision. It's the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, and the Deputy Attorney General, Ron Rosenstein, who are going to be doing the interviews. Mm-hmm. But I imagine at some point Trump will be consulted. And I can't imagine in an administration that places so much emphasis on loyalty that somebody getting up on their first public appearance as a very senior official saying, yeah, no, everything the White House said was wrong and this is what it really is going to fly.
Matt, I want to ask you the same question I asked our colleague Mike Schmidt earlier. In that case, we were talking about Comey. Now we're talking about McCabe. Is one of the lessons of all of this that being an independent operator in Washington right now basically means you're in conflict with President Trump?
I think we've got a lot of evidence of that. You know, Sally Yates.
She stood in defiance of the president's travel ban, writing in a letter, she is not convinced the executive order is lawful.
Fired for defying the president.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Comey.
With respect to the president's tweets about alleged wiretapping directed at him by the prior administration, I have no information that supports those tweets.
Had openly contradicted the president, and they got fired. None of this looks particularly good for people who want to be independent here. And I think it's a real concern. I was speaking to a very senior former intelligence official who was saying they've got a really big problem here because it looks like if you tell the emperor he's got no shoelaces, you're going to get shot. Nobody's going to tell him he has no clothes. And that's a huge problem when you're running a country, that you need to be able to hear contradictory information. And that's part of what like the FBI and the CIA and the NSA do. Yeah, that's their job. Bringing the information you don't want to hear so you can make a decision. And he was realistic. He said, you know, he'd run two very large intelligence bureaucracies. And he said, look, most people are just going to keep their heads down. There'll be a few heroes, but most people just put their heads down, do their jobs, and try and avoid getting their heads cut off. And, you know, that's a problem.
And Matt, what did you say the name of this hearing was again?
It's the Worldwide Threat Assessment. Let me just make sure I've got that name right. Hold on one second. What's today's date? Today is the 11th.
Yeah.
It's Worldwide Threats Hearing.
I mean, I ask that because is all of this that we've been discussing, this hearing getting hijacked, or does it make total sense, given the context we're in and the original intent of this hearing, that this is, in fact, what we're seeing, a worldwide threat?
I guess that depends on who you ask. I think there are a lot of national security people and people on the Hill and in parts of the government that would say, yes, this is a worldwide threat. The politics of who fired whom and why are probably less threatening, but the Russia issue was certainly seen as a serious national security issue. And I think, you know, one of the dangers here, though, is that you do get consumed with these internal political, I don't want to call them squabbles because I think it's a crisis. But you can consume them and you do miss other things. And you can see that in the testimony of Dan Coats, who's the director of national intelligence, who was just running through, you know, all the different threats. In Syria, they talk about the use of chemical weapons.
We assess that the regime will maintain its momentum on the battlefield, provided, as is likely, that it maintains support from Iran and Russia.
Cyber threats are listed high up.
Cyber threats continue to represent a critical national security issue for the United States.
One thing really jumped out at me, partly because I covered it for Afghanistan for so long, but there was just a paragraph from Coates that was so pessimistic.
Afghanistan will struggle to curb its dependence on external support until it contains the insurgency or reaches a peace agreement with the Taliban. Meanwhile, we assess that the Taliban is likely to continue to make gains, especially in rural areas. Afghan security forces' performance will probably worsen due to a combination of Taliban operations, combat casualties, desertions, poor logistics support, and weak leadership.
And, you know, this is nobody's going to pay any attention to this today. And that's not an unusual or particularly new assessment for the intelligence community, but it's starkly put. And I think that's one of the dangers here. So the Washington is consumed with this crisis. It doesn't have the bandwidth to pay attention to the many other issues that are happening around the world.
Right. So maybe the real threat is that the real threats aren't going to be paid attention to.
They're not. And you can. I mean, like anybody can tell you if you're involved in some kind of a personal crisis at home, your work suffers. There's only so much time in the day and so much space in your brain to kind of deal with the various issues you have to.
Matthew, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Here's what else you need to know today.
Mr. Rosenstein signed his name to a highly political memo arguing for Director Comey's dismissal.
Senate Democrats are demanding answers from Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, whose letter to President Trump criticizing James Comey was originally used by the White House to justify firing Comey.
It's also hard to believe that a seasoned prosecutor would write such a memo, which seems highly political. Not in the kind of language, not with the kind of annotation that prosecutors normally write in.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer sent Rosenstein a letter on Thursday with detailed questions about his role in Comey's dismissal, warning that Rosenstein's reputation for nonpartisanship is at risk unless he explains himself. Later, Schumer went on Twitter to thank Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell for asking Rosenstein to come in for a Senate briefing next week. And in his latest executive order, President Trump created a commission to investigate voter fraud in the United States, including his own unsubstantiated claims about illegal voting in the 2016 election. Trump has repeatedly stated, without evidence, that millions of undocumented immigrants cast ballots for his rival, Hillary Clinton, costing him the popular vote.
Of those votes cast, none of them come to me. None of them come to me. They would all be for the other side. None of them come to me. But when you look at the people that are registered, dead, illegal, and two states, and some cases maybe three states, we have a lot to look into.
The Times reports that Trump will appoint the Kansas Secretary of State, Kris Kobach, to oversee the commission. Despite little evidence of voter fraud, Kobach has called for the strictest voter identification laws in the country. If you like this show, please write a review of The Daily on iTunes or wherever it is you're listening. It helps new listeners find us, and we're grateful for your feedback. The Daily is produced by Theo Balcom, Lindsay Garrison, and Rachel Quester, with help from Andy Mills. Lisa Tobin is our executive producer. Samantha Hennig is our editorial director. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. Special thanks to Sam Dolnick, Peter Sale, Pedro Ozzano, Michaela Bouchard, and Joshua at Kinko's. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you Monday.